we left off last week having completed the riff, and I want to just circle back to the last point in the riff and the response for the moment of the Ramban as quoted in the Ritva. The Rif had made the following claim, and we'll need this because to analyze Tosfos, we'll want to be aware of this claim. We're at the bottom of Samach Vav Manal. That's where we're going to start reading. So I'm just representing the background. There appears to be a stira between our sugya and the sugya and Pesachim as to how one should paska in the halacha. The sugya and Pesachim presents a machlokas Rav and Levi, whether Recha Milsa. Does Reach count? Is it a problem or not? In that context, by the way, I'm biasing already where Tosis will be going. In that context, we're talking about the issue of Reach of non-kosher things making their way into kosher food. And so there was a Machlokas Rav and Levi, which on its own doesn't tell you how you should paskin, except that the balance of that Gemara seems to point in the direction of paskining like Rav. Particularly because there are two stories at the end of the Gemara, one's really a story, one's a brisa, being quoted by one of the Amoraim, which both indicate that if you roast meat and something else in the oven with it, you're not allowed to eat the substance with milk, which would imply that Recha Milsa. Now, our sugya, which we're about to look at, we're going to read, although much of our sugya, not all of it, is almost identical, or chunks of it are identical to the Gemara Pesachim. In our sugya, the same machlokas about Recha Milsa, or Recha Lav Milsa, is presented as a machlokas Rava Nabaye, where Rava comes out as saying that Recha Lav Milsa. And if Rava says Recha Lav Milsa, well, Rava Nabaye, we paskin like Rava. So even though the mashmaus, the implications of the simple reading of the sugya in Pesachim, are that we should paskin that reach is a concern, in our sugya, the obvious indication, not, you know, it's not even the simple, it's not implied, unless you're going to violate the rule, you have to paskin like Rava. And nobody, none of the Rishonim are going to paskin like Abaye. So the Rif explained that we paskin like Rava, obviously, and we paskin like Levi. We don't paskin like Rav. So what do you do with the Gemara and Pesachim? So the truth is, in the Gemara and Pesachim, there were actually, I think, four attempted proofs. There were two brises, one which the simpler reading was like Levi, one which the simpler reading was like Rav. But that wasn't what tipped the balance. What tipped the balance were the two Amoraic, quasi-Amoraic stories at the end. So the Rif explains that even Levi would agree with the two stories at the end. And since Levi could agree with the two stories, therefore the Gemara Pesachim doesn't even suggest that we should paskin against Levi, like Rav. So it's not even really an implied contradiction. Now, as far as I can tell, except for Rashi, most of the Rishonim will paskin like the last two stories in the Gemara Pesachim, even if they do paskin like Levi. Some Rishonim paskin like the last two stories because they say we paskin like Rav. The Rif says we paskin like the last two stories because even Levi would agree. And then the Ramban says also Levi would agree with those two stories, but for a totally different reason. Now, what was the Rif's defense? How did the Rif explain why, even according to Levi, you're not allowed to eat meat that was cooked in the food that was cooked in the oven with meat with milk? You can't eat that, what should have been power food, with milk. So the Rif makes two claims. Claim number one was that Levi's position, even though there's nothing explicit in the Gemara Pesachim, Levi's position is that Recha Lav Milsahi is only Bidiyaved, not Lechatchila. Lechatchila, you're not allowed to rely upon the notion that Recha Lav Milsahi. And therefore, the Rif says, since this par food that you cooked with meat in the oven can be consumed without milk, so to consume it with milk would in effect be being permitting Recha Lechatchila. Now the Gemara never actually says that, according to Levi, that it's only Bidiyavit. It happens to, the case happens to be Basar Nevela, Shetzlo, and Basar Kshera. That was the case. So it's presented as an after-the-fact issue, but that could be only because Rav says that even after the fact it's Osir, so you always have to present it in the post-facto tense to present the position that says that it's Osir to eat even afterwards. The fact that Levi says it's Mutter to eat doesn't obviously mean that he permits it l'chatchila to do that way, but it also doesn't imply either that he prohibits it l'chatchila. And there's at least one raya, as the Ramban points out in the Gemara, which would suggest that Levi, in fact, based upon one of the Gemara's questions, that Levi permitted it even l'chatchila. So the Ramban objects to the Rif's first claim that Levi only works b'di'evet. Now Rashi, by the way, Tosus attributes to Rashi, if you remember, the same thing that the Rif says, that Levi only permits b'di'evet, although Rashi, I don't think we saw anywhere that Rashi actually said that Levi is only b'di'evet. But either way, the Rif certainly says it explicitly, but the Ramban says, no, that's not true. The second proof that the Rif brought was, or argument that the Rif brought to explain why we paskin, that you can't, that you're not allowed to eat the power food, the fish, the bread that was cooked, that was baked with meat in the oven. You're not allowed to eat that with milk. The Rif said that it's like a davar sheyesh lo matirin, and whenever you have a davar sheyesh lo matirin, there's no bittul. So davar sheyesh lo matirin means that I have one substance which is usher now but will become mutter. It gets mixed into heter, things that are already permissible. And later, I'm going to, now I want to eat them, rely upon the principle of bittul. So the Gemara says that a davar sheyesh lo matirin is not bata. So the Ramban says, hold your horses, this is problematic, because one of the rules of davar sheyesh lo matirin is that davar sheyesh lo matirin, we're only stringent on that it's not batel if you're talking about min bimino, two things of the same kind, of the same flavor. But if you're talking about min b'she'eino mino, a davar sheyesh lo matirin does have bittul. Now, I promised I would review the Ran for you, so I'm going to take the opportunity now to review the Ran. We've done this once, but now I think it's hopefully will be a little bit easier. The Ran was bothered by this Rif. By what is the Rif talking about? And so the Ran explains, in trying to explain the Rif, why does the Rif say that davar sheyesh lo matirin here is not batel if it's min b'she'eino mino? It's two different flavors, and there's no difference whether yesh lo matirin or not. So what is the Rif talking about? So the Ran explains the following. So firstly, the Ran says, we know we have a machlokas in general, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, whether or not min b'mino is ever batel. Is ever batel. And Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is understood by the Gemara, based upon a Mishnah in Zvachim, the sugya is in Menachos. The Rabbi Yehuda holds min b'mino is not batel. Period. So, why? So the Ran explains the following. In order to have bittul, you have to have two substances that get mixed together, and there's a clash. And we now have to define which side wins, which side defines the substance. So the Ran says that when you have two things that are not the same flavor, not the same min, everybody understands that there's a clash between the physical difference between min and eino mino. But what happens in a situation where the two things are physically the same, and the only difference between them is their halachic status, called their metaphysical status, where one of them is iser and one of them is heter? So on the one hand, from a physical perspective, they're identical. There should be no clash, maybe there should be no bittul. On the other hand, one of them is heter, one of them is iser. One of them is permitted, one is prohibited. And so that is the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda Nachachamer. Rabbi Yehuda believes that in order to have bittul, the metaphysical difference is insufficient to generate a clash, and therefore both substances remain extant intact wherever they are, and there's no bittul. Whereas the Chachamim feel that it doesn't matter whether or not it's a physical difference or a metaphysical difference. Either way, we still say that that's enough of a difference in order to create a conflict, and therefore the rules of bittul come into play. That's step one. Now, why is the davar sheyesh lo matirin not batel? Now, everybody agrees, even the Chachamim. So the Ran explains the following. And the rule is that davar sheyesh lo matirin, the normal rule, only applies that stringency by min b'mino. It doesn't apply by min b'she'eino mino. Why are we stringent to say that by min b'mino, two things of the same species, same flavor, that if one of them is mutter and one of them is going to become mutter, but it's usher right now, why do we say there's no bittul? So the Ran says, because here already, physically they're identical, and even metaphysically speaking, they're barely different, because it's not heter and iser, it's heter and almost heter. it will be mutter later, and therefore there's not enough of a contrast, of a conflict, in order to invoke the process of bittul. Now, that's only true, the Ran says, normally by Davar Sheish L'Matirin, when it's min bimino, because they're physically identical, and the metaphysical differences are barely detectable. But if it's min b'she'eino mino, then the physical differences are still there, it's quite a contrast, and therefore, by min b'she'eino mino, as a general rule, Davar Sheish L'Matirin, it does have bittul. So then what is, so that's the question the Ramban asks on the Rif. So they're talking about, I cook bread in an oven with meat. You want to say that some of this is considered a davar sheish l'matirin, but the meat is a different flavor than the milk or the bread, I don't know what you want to call, the milk you're going to eat with later, the bread that it's in now. So how can you say davar sheish l'matirin, and it's not batel? It's min b'she'eino mino. So the Ran makes, it's still quite a claim to explain the Rif, which is the following. The Ran says, this is a case, in a case of Davar Sheish L'Matirin, by Min B'she'eino Mino, you have a physical difference between the two substances, and you have a metaphysical difference, but it's a small one. One is Usur, one is Mutter, but the Usur is going to become Mutter eventually. But the Ran says here that's not true. Here what we have is mutter and mutter, because the milk, obviously, that you would eat the bread with is mutter, but what about the bread itself? So the Ran says, you can eat the bread right now, just don't eat it with milk. So it's not that the bread is something that's also that's going to become mutter. The bread is already mutter, it's just not mutter to eat with the milk. And therefore, the Ran says, here, the metaphysical difference in effect shrinks to zero, and if the two things are both heter and heter, it doesn't matter if they have different flavors, there is no concept of bittul. So this is where that Ran that I mentioned comes in. He comes up with this idea, A, to explain the general rule of Davar Sheish L'Matirin not being batel, which is limited to min b'mino, and then he explains why, in this exceptional case, the Rif says that min b'she'eino mino is even by Davar Sheish L'Matirin is not batel. This is the famous Ran in the Daran Daf Nun Beis to explain this. Okay, so that is the end. That's the Rif's position. And the Shulchan Aruch is going to paskin like the Rif. We will eventually, maybe next week, I'll bring in copies of the Shulchan Aruch, and we'll look at actually how Recha is played out halacha l'maisa. But for the moment, at the end of Hilchos Basar Bachor, that's Recha Milsa, Recha La Milsa, he, I believe, is Simen Kuf Ches, in Hilchos Tarovis in Yerodea. But this particular issue about the bread cooked with meat in the bake, roasted with meat in the oven, I believe is cited at the last Simen of Hilchos Basar Bachor in Simen Saadi Zayin in Yerodea. So we'll take a look at this, God willing, either next week or the following week. Hopefully next week. We have to just get through the Gemara. We have to talk about Tosis's position.
What's an example of something that's not yet heter?
If you have a beitza, an egg that was laid on Yom Tov, and if you wait till after Yom Tov, it will be mutter, but on Yom Tov you're not allowed to eat it. Or the quintessential d'oraisa example would be tvua hadasha, grain that was harvested before the Karban HaOmer, and once the Karban HaOmer is brought, the grain becomes yashan and it's now permitted to consume. So there are a good number of examples, anyway, with this exception, there's one other exception, but as a general rule, Davar Sheish L'Matirin, which is in, I think, Simen Kuf Beis in Yerodeh and Hilchos Tarovos, so Davar Sheish L'Matirin is not batel by min b'mino, it is batel min b'she'eino mino. So if your egg that was nolda on Yom Tov fell into, I don't know, a pot of meat or something like that, so the egg would be batel b'shishim because that's min b'she'eino mino.
But you're allowed to do the bishul on the egg before Yom Tov ends.
No, the egg is also mukta. It just means if the eggs happen to by accident fall.
We're talking about a case where it's an accidental.
Yeah, accident. Yeah. Almost all bittul. There is a rule that's discussed in Simen Sadi Tes in Yerodeh, the second Simen Hilchos Tarovos. Ein mevatlin isur lachatchila. You're not allowed to intentionally mevatel it, and if you do it on purpose, it's usur for the person who did it and the person for whom it was done to consume it. Anybody else could consume it, assuming that the bittul is actually efficacious.
Yashan is an isur of eating or isur of baking?
Eating. There is an issue of ketsira, stuff that, if it was the kind of grain, the quality, the location, that could have been brought in the mikdash, there might be an issue of racious ketsirachem, but there's a mishnah in the Pesachim at the end of the fourth parak about the practice of Anshe Yericho, what they did in the Chachamim weren't so happy. There's a question if you can harvest, maybe you can harvest, but you can't pile up the grain, you know, create the pile. Some of it could be a concern of a doraisa, racious ketsirachem, some of it could be a concern that you might come to eat it. But it's fundamentally an Isser Achila. It's an Isser Achila. Yeah. Okay. So now, let's jump back and do our sugya from its beginning, some of which will look familiar, some of which won't. The beginning doesn't look so familiar, in order to understand what's going on here. So we are on the second to bottom line, on Daf Samach Vav Amid Aleph. And the Gemara, on the third word, says the following. Chala lego chamra, if vinegar falls into wine, divrei hakol beno seintam. Now, we have to review one little point here. Two little points. We're talking about yayin nesach here. The rule with yayin nesach is that min yayin litoch yayin, yayin be yayin, min bimino, there is no bittel. One drop of yayin nesach into regular yayin, the entire vat is usser. Yayin into non-yayin follows the standard rules of what we call no saint tam, whether it flavors, and we often use shishim as the shorthand. Abaye and Rava had a debate. How do you define min bimino with respect to yayin nesach? Now, again, I'll review this. We've spoken about this. When we, on an everyday basis in our kitchen shilas today, whenever we're talking about min bimino, min bishenomino, we're not talking about these very fancy isurim. There are a few isurim that are kind of different. We don't deal with truma. We don't really deal with orla, kilayim, yayin nesach. We hope not. I mean, yayin nesach is the only one that could actually happen, possibly, if you bought non-kosher wine. Although, any non-kosher wine today would not be yayin nesach. It would be Stam Yenam, and Rabbeinu Tam has a kul that Stam Yenam is Bato B'Shishim. But let's assume in our kitchens today, we only deal with the issue of Min B'Mino, Min B'Sheino Mino, with respect to flavor. In other words, and this is also a point of review, but it's good to do it, we'll do it again at some point. Everybody agrees, not everybody, the way we paskin, we don't accept Rabbi Yehuda's position. We say that min bimino, two things of the same flavor, there is bittul, and min d'oraisa, it's the most lenient area, because min d'oraisa, you only need more than, you need a majority of heter. 50%+ of heter, and 50% minus of iser, min ha-Torah, if it's min bimino, you can't obviously taste the iser, because it tastes the same as the heter, it's batal. Midrabanan, they required shishim. They required bitul hatam. Why? Presumably because min b'she'eno mino, two things of a different flavor, but even this is a machlokas harishon that we're going to explore, not right now. I'm going to simplify for the moment. Min b'she'eno mino, many rishonim hold that mid oraisa, you require bitul hatam. And if you have 50 parts kosher food and one part non-kosher food, and you can taste the non-kosher food, it's Aser Min HaTorah. So, when it comes to Min B'She'en Omino, in a regular garden variety Isser, you require Shishim, you require Bittul HaTam. Therefore, by Min B'Mino, even though it's the same flavor, and Min HaTorah, a majority is sufficient, the Rabbanan required Shishim as well. So the bottom line is, in every kitchen shayla you deal with, you assume you require Shishim. Sometimes Midoraisa it's required, sometimes Midrabbanan. In that context, we assume that the definition of min bimino or min b'she'eno mino is, of course, tam, flavor. Because the whole point is, can I taste the iser? Can I not taste the iser? If I can't taste the iser, it's gone. It's avra batla min ha'olam. If I can taste it, it's a problem. So, of course, the way we're going to define min bimino has nothing to do with what we call it. It's going to have to do with what taste it has. Once, however, you are transitioning to talking about prohibitions, where when it's min bimino, there's no bittul at all, whereas when it's min b'she'eno mino, you apply the regular rule of 60. So now we found a machlokas Abaye and Rava. Abaye says, the definition of what is min b'mino, two things of the same kind, is the same. Basar taima azlina. You follow the taste, like we'd always do. It makes life much simpler if you're trying to think about things. Of course, technically speaking, we don't pasuk like Abaye. Rava says, we follow the shame. We follow the shame of the iser. Even if the taste is the same, but it has a different name, it's called something different, then there's bittul. And even if it tastes different, but it has the same shame, that's called min bimino, and it's never bata. That's the machlokes Abaye and Rava. Now, the Gemara gave an example of an afkamina the following. If you have new wine, meaning freshly pressed grape juice, that falls onto grapes, into grapes, and that newly pressed wine is now yayin esach. Do we say that since the wine and the grapes have the same flavor, essentially, when the wine gets into the grapes, the new wine, the grape juice, you're not going to be able to taste it. Since they have the same flavor, that's called mimbamino, even though one is called yayin and one is called grapes. That's one case you'd have a machlokas, where Abaye would say you follow the tam and it's not batel, and Reva would say you follow the shame, and as long as there's less than a 60th, it's batel. And if you had new wine that fell into old fermented wine, where the taste is different, but the name is the same. They're both wine, but they taste different. So in that case, Abaye would say there's bittul because they taste different, and Rava would say even though they taste different, nonetheless, it's not batel even if you have 1,000 times heter wine, because basar shma azlina. We follow the name for determining whether it's the same min, and therefore wine into wine, even if it's two different kinds of wine, is still wine. So when we get there to the bottom of the Amud, the Gemara says the following. If you have vinegar that falls into wine, everybody agrees that it is b'nosein tam, that it's batel b'shishim. Why? So what's the concern? So Rashi explains the following. There's an assumption here. I'm not going to say whether I think this is going to be so physically manifest, but the assumption is that there is vapor always coming off the lower substance. When I pour the upper substance in, before it reaches, actually gets into the body of the lower substance, the lower liquid, something, the vapor of the lower thing may infuse the upper liquid. Now, if I have vinegar and wine, meaning wine that turned into vinegar, if I have vinegar and wine, when I pour the vinegar in, firstly, even when the vinegar gets into the wine's airspace, the wine is not going to turn it back into vinegar. Right? The wine doesn't have the overwhelming power to do that. Therefore, before the vinegar gets into the wine, and when it enters the wine, what does it taste like? Vinegar. And what does it smell like? What is it going to smell like? It's going to smell like vinegar. And therefore, and it's going to presumably taste like vinegar. And therefore, it both has a different taste than the wine and a different name than the wine. One is called chamra, wine, and one is called chala, vinegar. One of them tastes like wine, one of them tastes like vinegar. Therefore, everybody agrees there's bittul b'shishim. Everybody agrees, divrei hakol b'nosein tam. Chamra l'go chala, let's say you have vinegar, wine falling into vinegar. Abaye amar b'mashehu. Abaye says that it is b'mashehu. Why? The Gemara will explain in a moment. The Rava Amar Beno Saint Tom. Rava says no, there's Bittul B'shishim. Abaye Amar B'mashehu. Why? Because Reche Chala Vitama Chamra Chala. Abaye says that if you have wine that tastes like wine still, but it smells like vinegar. I've never experimented with this, but I know with milk, sometimes you get milk that smells like it's going off, but if you taste it, it's fine. If it really smells off, I will pour it out, but you want to check and taste it and so on, it'll taste perfectly fine. So the assumption here is you can have something that still tastes like wine, but it's giving off the smell of vinegar. What is the status of such wine? Is that called wine, or is that called vinegar? In other words, do you follow the tam, or do you follow the reyach? So Abaye says you follow the reyach, and therefore the substance in the wine, when it reaches the airspace of the vinegar, is turned into vinegar. And therefore Abaye says you have vinegar into vinegar, and he's assuming that the way you define its taste is also by its smell rather than by its taste. So it has the taste of vinegar. It's called vinegar because reche chala v'tama chamra is called chala, and therefore Abaye says it's mimbamino. And it's Osa B'mashehu. Rava Amar, at the end of the second line on Samach Vav Amar Beis, B'no Sein Tam. Why? Reche Chala, the Tama Chamra, if it smells like vinegar but tastes like wine, Chamra. It's the wine. Why? Because obviously Reche Lav Milsahi. Vahavale min b'she'eno mino v'chol min b'she'eno mino b'no seintan. In other words, what Abaye and Rava in this case agree on the basic principle of the din, the only machlokus is how do you treat food that is moving into another state, and it already smells like the new state, but it still tastes like the old state, or still tastes enough like the old state. Now, what emerges from this, as you can imagine where the Gemara is going to go, would be that Abaye says, Recha milsahi. And Rava says, Recha la milsahi. Because the Gemara, I don't know if explicitly makes that explicit, but it's pretty obvious. Okay. Now the Gemara says the following. Hai bas tiha. What is bas tiha? It's a machlokas harishonim. Rashi says a bas tiha is when they make just simply a hole in the barrel where you can smell the wine to check, you know, what the quality is. Tosfos and other Rishonim, for whatever reason, it's not so important for us, both based upon the vocabulary and to explain a relatively minor question in the Gemara, Tosfos says, no, it's actually like a kind of a spout or a straw. And what you do is you suck up stuff into the straw, but not into your mouth, and then you're able to then smell it. In other words, you pull the wine into the straw, and I guess you put the end of the straw, once you've done that, into your nose, even though the wine will probably drip back out, and then you get a much better smell of it, a much stronger sense of what the wine is.
Called the wine thief. The straw that's dipped into the barrel is called a wine thief.
Okay.
You put it in, you block it with your...
Yes, and you can drain it that way.
So
you could drain a gas tank if they're also siphoning it off. But okay, until they put the things in the gas tank after the, I think, the 79 crisis, that's where they started building the cars that you cannot get something in there to get the gas out. So
that's what you learn parking up near NYU.
Oh, I guess so. I discovered that when one of the hurricanes was coming and we filled up our cars and thought, well, in case we really need gas, we could get it from the gas tank. But then I realized there was no way to get that gas out of the gas tank for the generator, so forget it. So anyway, so bottom line is that it's not that material, really, to the issue. It explains one detail in the Gemara and the vocabulary, but it's not such a concern to us. So what's the din of a bas tiha when you have either a Jew's wine and a non-Jew smelling it, or a non-Jew's wine and a Jew smelling it? So the Gemara says, Oved kochavim b'di Yisrael, shaper dami. A goy smelling a Jew's wine is not a problem at all. Now, I can't resist. I'll explain why, what the machlokas was about. If you say that it's just a hole in the barrel where you smell, then of course a goy smelling a Jew's wine is not a problem. Why would you think it's a problem? But if it's a case of the Gentile sort of sucking something but not drinking it and then letting it go back in, so it's a little more like a guy pouring wine into the Jew's barrel, that's the chiddush of why Yisrael, Akum b'di Yisrael Shari, why it's not so obvious. And it requires at least a little bit of a novel point. But that's not our issue. Our issue comes in the next one, which is Yisrael b'da Oved Kochavim, a Jew smelling a guy's wine, Abaye Omar Asur and Rava Omar Mutar. Abaye Amar Asur, Recha Milsahi. Rava Amar Mutar, Recha Lav Milsahi. That's what happens. So the Rishonim incidentally point out, and I might explain why in a moment, that the assumption here actually is that if Recha is Milsahi, it's actually considered eating, or in this case, drinking. One of the rayas of the Gemara that makes it very clear. It's not merely Hana'ah, because if it were merely Hana'ah, it would be applicable to wine, but for example, it would be irrelevant in the Sugyim Sachem. In the Sugyim Sachem, Nevela, meat, is not Aser Bahana'ah. It's only Aser Ba'achila. So in that Sugya, when Rav and Levi are arguing about Recha Milsa, Recha Milsahi, obviously it means Recha Milsahi, and then when you consume what it's in, or you consume it, that's actually considered Achila or Shasiya. It can't simply be the Reach is giving you Hana'ah. Nobody would debate. It's absolutely clear that there's Hana'ah from Reach. That's not the issue. The question is Recha Milsahi with respect to being considered eating or drinking? Okay. Now, one, before we read the Gemara's continuation, its questions, and so on, most of which is familiar to you, note that there is one major difference between this and the Sugya in Psachim. As an aside, and I mentioned this last week, in both Sugyos, the Amoraim do not use the words Recha Milsa, Recha La Milsahi. In both Sugyas, it's the Gemara that fills it in. But do note that at least in our Sugya, Abaye and Rava, and again, it's the Gemara's explanation, but I have no reason to contest it. Abaye and Rava clearly do have an issue about Recha Milsa, Recha La Milsahi, based upon the first lines on the page, about the wine, the vinegar which is the wine which is turning into vinegar, and you pour one to the other, right? That seems to be the pretty obvious explanation. Okay, but it's the Gemara that fills it in. Now, so the difference, the major difference between these two sugyos is that the Gemara in Pesachim is talking about Reach getting into another food. Here, it's talking about the Reach be'en, you know, on its own, not mixed into something else. Now, if you had to argue which one might you be more inclined to be stringent on, which would you have argued?
Go either way.
Really?
Well, yeah.
I would have argued, I think. Maybe you can go either way. In fact, you almost have to for Tosos. I would have argued that the be'en of the Reach is worse than when it's betarobis of the meat, when it's mixed into the meat.
Yeah, but it has no substance to it. It's not embodied. It needs to find food to be embodied, and now you could eat it. It's like the neshama.
So I think I would formulate your suggestion, Sam, a little differently, which is, it's true that one is on its own and one is mixed in with something else, but in one case you were actually consuming it in totality, whereas once it's in the meat, you actually eat the meat, whereas here, the wine just goes right back into the barrel. That, I think, would be a better argument as to why to distinguish. Because both of the reachs are coming from a solid food, a real food. One's coming from the nevela meat, one's coming from the wine. Right, so I'm more inclined to argue that you could be the argument to be stringent in the Gemara Pesachim's case is that in the end you do eat the food, you imbibe it, you know, and the food is gone with the reach in it. Whereas here you don't actually drink anything or eat anything. At the end of the day, nothing winds up actually in your stomach, you know, which would have contained the reach. Okay, so anyway, so now the Gemara says as follows: Amar Rava, mino aminala the reicha velo kolomhu. How do I know that Reach does not count? Meaning it's not considered Achila Shasia. Ditran, Tanur Shehisiko Bikamon, Shel Truma. If you fire an oven, and when you use the fuel, instead of using plain wood, you use cumin, which was Truma. I assume that's the spice cumin. So you use, I guess, dried cumin, and you burn it in the oven, and makes the oven hot. Now, truma is not aser b'hana, even to a non-kohen. Now, va'afa boas hapas, and you bake the bread. Hapas muteres, the bread may be consumed, lefi, she'ein ta'am kamon, el areach kamon. Because there's no flavor of the kamon in the food, and the kamon is truma. So a non-kohen won't be able to eat it, it's just reach. So the Mishnah seems to make pretty clear that recha, Lav milsahi. Doesn't count. It's not a problem. Now, the Rishonim point out that this raya that Rava tries to bring, Abaye is going to deflect it. But they point out that this raya makes clear that we're not talking about that reach is a form, reach is asur bahana. We're talking about Reach actually being considered eating it, drinking it, in our case, and eating Pesachim. Why? Because I could have easily, if the only issue was one of getting Hana'ah, let's say by Bastiha, whether Reicha Milsahi with respect, is that considered Hana'ah or not? Well, then Rava's attempted proof was ridiculous. What kind of a proof is this? Truma is permitted by Hana'ah to Zarim, to non-Kohanim. It's only a non-Kohen is not allowed to eat Truma. So, of course, Abaye would agree. If the only issue of reach is one of hana'ah, not of actual consumption, of course he would agree that if you fire an oven with kamon, and now you can smell the kamon in the bread, that it doesn't matter. Because if that's just an issue of hana'ah, truma is moter b'hana'ah. Yeah, so it must be that the whole issue of bastia is not whether reach is considered getting hana'ah. It certainly is getting hana'ah. The question is whether recha is considered actually consuming something, eating something. So this was Rava's question against Abaye. So the Gemara responds and says as follows. Abaye says, Abaye, shani hosam demikal ye isure. Abaye says, no. that you, when is recha milsahi, and it's considered like eating or drinking, when the prohibited substance is ban, it exists. But where is the kamon after you fire the oven? It's gone. It was the wood. It was essentially the wood, the tinder, the kindling material that you heated the oven with. So by the time the kamon could even flavor the bread, and remember how they bake their bread. It's not the way we bake our bread. I mean, I don't know how we bake our bread. I know how we bake our bread, but I don't know what we would do. But they didn't. But as we cook, we roast, for example, over the fire, right? Abaye would say that if you baked your roast for Shabbos over kamon shel truma, it would be usher to eat. Why? Because as you're baking the meat, so the kamon is there and it's being burned. But the way they used to bake their bread, the way they used to bake in ovens generally, is they would fire up the oven, they would heat it up. I mean, these were brick ovens. And then you would often just remove the fuel. You didn't need it anymore. You know, it mostly was burned. These ovens, I always explain to students, the first time I've ever seen a real brick oven, you know, the functions of brick ovens is in Camp Stone. So they have in the village, what they call the village in Camp Stone, they have a brick oven, which they regularly use during, you know, as part of showing and teaching kids. And today, you know, they talk about in the Gemara doing hatmana, you know, or having hot food on Shabbos day by putting stuff in the tanner. Now, if you didn't put any, the question is, how is the food hot on Shabbos day in the oven? If you took our ovens and you turn off the oven and you leave the food in there before Shabbos, what will it be like Shabbos morning? Cool. Ice cream, room temperature. But if you take a brick oven, it can take hours and hours and hours and hours for the brick oven to cool down. You can bake in it long after any fuel has been burned. Right? It takes a long time to heat up and it takes a long time to cool down. So that's how you could have hot food by simply having put it in the oven before Shabbos, even if you raked out the coals before Shabbos to avoid various kinds of problems. So in the Tzedakah Gemara you're referring to. When they're baking, the kamon isn't there anymore. The kamon is poof, it's gone. So Abaye says, Mikla Kali Isura, it's entirely consumed. It's been burned. And therefore, it's not that reach is not a problem. But if the kamon was be'en when you were baking it, so Abaye would say the Mishnah would never permit it. That's what Abaye says. Okay. Now the Gemara continues. What's the question?
I mean, I don't know that this is true.
What?
That the kamon is not in the bread.
So I said this already the last couple of weeks. From a chemical perspective, we understand, we believe and understand, and I assume it's correct, I'm not just saying if you smell something, it means because there are invisible particles of one food and the other. That's how it transfers. And I mentioned, I think, early on in this discussion, I once asked Rav Schechter the question of what happens if you have, a student came to me, they left a turkey open in the fridge and there's some chocolate there too, milk chocolate or something like that, and you could taste, you know, when somebody tasted the turkey, it tasted like the chocolate. So we said it was usher, I believe he told me it was usher, yeah. So I don't know how to kind of bridge the two exactly. So I understand the chemistry, I got that. What you could say is that yes, but it's too small an amount. If you were to look at the particulate matter, it'd be less than shishim, and we don't care that it smells that way. We only care that it kind of tastes that way. I haven't fully worked it out, I admit.
You know, kamun, you're claiming that it's wood. It isn't. They're seeds, and it's a plant. And the kamun is placed in the oven in order to give flavor.
Well, to give smell, probably.
Yes. So the smell is essential.
So I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on here because kamon, again, once it's dried, it doesn't matter whether it's seeds or the pods that they're, you know, or whatever they're on. If once it's dried, it can serve as fuel. So if you would ask me,
they're small.
I
don't think even a bushel full of that will give you any heat. It's a flavoring.
It sounds like from the Mishnah. But it doesn't. It really doesn't. It, you know, I'm not going. There's no point in arguing that issue. The bottom line is that whether or not it's a little bit there, a lot there, the bottom line is that it's that the reach in this case, for whatever the reason, like Rava or like Abaye, is not considered tam certainly. Now the Gemara says, and you'll recognize the rest of this. Amar Rav Mari Kitanai. Rav Mari suggests the machlokas Rav and Abaye, whether reicha is milsa or reicha is lav milsa, is really machlokas atanaim. Harode paschama, if you take hot bread out of the oven, unesana al pichave shel yayin shel truma, and you put it on top of a barrel of wine, which is truma. Rabbi Meir Oser, Rabbi Yehuda Matir, and Rabbi Yosei Matir b'shalchitim v'oser b'shalsarim neshasarim shovo. So we saw this Mishnah Masachim the exact same riot. Rabbi Meir says it's aser, presumably because recha milsahi. Rabbi Yehuda says it's mutter, because recha la milsahi. And Rabbi Yosei says it depends. B'shalchitim is permitted because it doesn't, because recha, the way some Rishonim say, because recha la milsahi. And sa'orim is aser because it's shovo, it actually absorbs the mamashos of the wine. And therefore, it's an exception. It's no longer recha. It's actually the end of the wine and the bread, and therefore a non-kohen can't eat it. So, my lab ha-kamapalgi, the mar, which is Rabbi Meir, sava recha milsahi, umar sava recha v'lav klumhu. So the Gemara says, l'rava, we saw this in Sachem again, it's all the same. V'vadai tanahi. Rava has to say it's a machlokes tanaim. In other words, there's no way for Rava to explain his position and Rami Meir's position according with one another. He has to acknowledge Rami Meir disagrees with his position and holds that Reichas Melsahi. But he would say that Rabbi Huda and probably Rabbi Yossi too, they hold like me. However, La Abaye mi lema tanaihi, does Abaye have to concede that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with him? So the Gemara says, Amar lach Abaye lav. Abaye could say to you, no. He could say, everybody agrees with me that Recha milsahi. So why does Rabbi Yehuda, maybe Rabbi Yosei permit in this case? Mi lav mi itmar Allah. Abaye says, was it not said with respect to, Abaye would say to you, was it not said with respect to this Mishnah, Amar Rabba Barchana, Amar Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish said, B'paschama, B'chavis Pesucha, Divrei HaKalasura. If you have hot bread, warm bread, and an open barrel with wine, everybody agrees that the Reach will get in, and it's a problem. The pas sonenes, if the bread is cold, the chavis magufa, and the barrels has a lid on top of it. So it's not even directly over the wine, devrei akal muteres. Lo nechleku the machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, is only in a case, ela bepas chama v'chavis magufa, and bepas sonenes v'chavis psucha. If you have either the bread is cold, even though the barrel of wine is open, it's directly on top of it, or even if the bread is hot, but there's a cover on the barrel. That's where they argue. And Abaye says, our case of Recha, Bastiha, all these cases are a case of hot bread, Chavis Psucha, where all the Tanoim agree that Recha Milsahi and it's a problem. So Abaye can say to you, that no, it's not a Machalokas Tanoim. I can work with all the Tanoim. Rava has to concede that his opinion will not work, certainly with Rabbi Meir's opinion. Okay, that's the end of the Sugya Avodah Zarah. This last part was identical to what we saw in Psachim. So now, Tosos realizes there's a problem, the same problem that the Rif realized and the Gaon realized. So we're going to read just the first half of Tosos. Tosos, the big Tosos, the biggest of the Tosos, in Ansamach Vav Amabei, says the following. Rava Amar, it's the fourth, the wide line, Dibar Maska, Rava Amar Muta Rechala Milsahi. Tosos says, Perak Ketzat Solon, Polignami Rava Levi Berecha Gabe Basar Shemein Shetzlau and Basar Nevela. So in Psachim, Rav and Levi also argue about the issue of Recha, just like Abai and Rava. Rav Asar Velevi Shari. Vahasam, says Tosus, in Psachim, Tanya Kavase de Rav. We have a Braisa that really works like Rav. Upirisham Rashi. The Afa Gav the Tanya Kivase the Rav the Osar, even though we have a Braisa that works like Rav Imsachim, Mikomakom, Halocha Kalevi the Shari, we still paskin like Levi. Mishum the Rava Savar Kivase. Hocha Gabe Bastiha. The Halocha Karava Lagabe Abaye. So yes, Rashi says, but because we have to paskin like Rava, that's a given, obviously we paskin like Levi as well. Uposak kach Rashi perakeit atzon. That is Rashi's psak. V'lo nira, Tosa says, it does not appear correct. The hasam ka'amar, the uvda hava bahu binisa ditavya bahade bisra, the asre ravami parzikula mechle bekuta, umase rav. So he points out to the last part in the Gemara, which wasn't even a brisa. The last two stages of the Gemara were Tanya Kavase Deran, and that were Tanya. There was not Kavase Derav. It doesn't say that, but it's Tanya that if you break the bread in the oven with meat, you can't eat with milk. And then that's a Braisa. Then they quote a story with a later Amorim. So it's Maser Rav. It's not just a theoretical position. It was an actual psak. Someone roasted fish with meat in the oven, and the Gemara said you're not allowed. He said you're not allowed to. Rabbi Parzikya said you can't eat it with milk. So it's not just stam that you have a Braisa. It's actually, you have Maisa Rav that points that we paskin like Rav. Those two terms, by the way, are not connected, Maisa Rav and Rav. They're just, Maisa Rav means, you know, a rabbinical story, action that actually followed a certain ruling. Just as a Bar Bei Rav is a Ben Beis Medrash, not necessarily the Rav. House of Ravs, yes. So Maisa Rav, that's number one. V'gam Mar Baravashi Oser Sham, Afilu B'Milchav. So Mar Baravashi then came along and said, not only can you not eat the fish with milk, you can't eat the fish with salt because it's dangerous. So obviously he holds you can't eat it with milk. So, v'halacha kemoso bar mitrei mile. We paskin like Mar Baravashi. Every case he has an argument in Shas, except for two cases, and that's not one of them. So that's question number two, or proof number two. For od kasha, de'i pligi abaye v'rava b'plukta d'rava levi. If in fact Amai and Rav and Levi are having truly the identical machlokas, so then im kein hava leile isuri pliktayu hasam. We should have brought Rava and Abaye, we should have cross-referenced them. The Gemara should have said, you know, that Abaye is like Rav, and Rav is like Levi. That's what the Gemara should have done. The fact that the Gemara does not cross-link them would suggest that it's not the same machlokas. Lachei nira says Tosos, the vada halacha kerav, the hasam, the recha milsei, we definitely paskin like Rav. There. The halacha kerav anami haha gabi bastia, the recha la milsei. Rava, we paskin like here. The abaye nami the hacha, the amar recha milsei, and even abaye here, who says that recha is milsei, amar lei, anada amri afilu kalevi, the amahasam recha la milsei. So I'm not going to read further for now, but Tosis is going to explain how both Rava and Abaye could claim that they both would, each one would say, I could hold like either Rav or Levi. They would each say that the Gemara Pesachim is a different case, and whatever you hold there doesn't indicate what you have to hold in our sugya. So one, and then Tosis goes on to say that there's a whole hierarchy of different levels of Tam, where you could sort of take any point on the spectrum and say, this is where I draw the line, and I say, of Reach, excuse me, this is where I draw the line and say, Recha Milsehi. Up until here, Recha Lab Milsehi, Mikan Ve'elach, from here on in, Recha Milsehi. So that's what Tosis suggests. So Tosis says that there really is no contradiction between the sugyos, even though the Gemara uses the exact same terminology, Recha Milsa, Recha La Milsa, and even though the Gemara quotes exactly the same, at least one of the major rayas that's brought, is this raya of the Mishnah in Trumos, but nonetheless, Tosfos says they are separable cases, and therefore it is possible to split the Psach. You can paskin either like Rav and Levi in one, and then you can go to Psach, to Avodah Zarah, our Sugya, and you could paskin like either Abaye or Rava. And therefore, therefore, you treat each sugya separately, based upon the internal evidence of the sugya in Psachim, with the Braisa and the Amoraim at the end, who paskin like Rav, the way Tosfos reads it. Therefore, we paskin like Rav in that case, whatever that case is. And when it comes to a case of Bastiha, we would paskin like Rava, because we always paskin like Rava against Abaye. So it's the very same problem that the Rif and the Gaonim faced with the apparent steer between the two Gemaras. And the Gaonim and the Rif basically decided that one klal of Psach was more powerful than the other, namely Rav and Abaye. We only paskin like Abaye in six cases, therefore we must paskin like Rava. And therefore, despite the fact that the Gemara there might lean a little bit towards Rav, nonetheless we paskin like Levi. Now the way the Rif and the Ramban get around that is by explaining that the last two parts of the Gemara are actually not only according to Rav, they would work even according to Levi. Rashi and Psachim doesn't say that. Rashi and Psachim says that the Tanya Kavaseh at the end with the meat and the bread, and then the story with Rav Miparzikya with the meat and the fish, Rashi says, Inachanami, that's Rav Shita, but we still reject Rav's position in Psachim, despite all the evidence there, because of the Sugyan Avodah Zarah. Whereas the Rif and the Ramban say, no, we reject Rav's position because we can make most of that Gemara work even for Levi. For Rashi, it would be a much bigger leniency. For Rashi, it would say, most certainly, that if you cook the bread in the oven with the meat, Rashi would say, you're allowed to eat it with milk. Whereas both the Rif and the Ramban, for different reasons, I realize now I never told you what the Ramban's reason was, both say that you're not allowed to consume the bread with milk. The Rif said again, as we mentioned earlier, number one, that would be doing it l'chatchila, and Levi only permits b'di'evet. And number two, the Rif says it's a davar sheish l'matirin, and therefore you're not allowed to have the milk. The Ramban thinks neither of those approaches is correct. He just says that because people are generally not poresh from basar or from chalav, you know, because we have it around all the time, the chachamim were extra machmir in that case to treat, I guess, recha milk like it's milsa in that case, but it wouldn't apply by other isurim. Okay, sorry. One last point in our sugya, and I mentioned this, I think, last week, but we can take a moment to look at the Tosfos. Tosfos, let's take a look at the bottom, the big Tosfos, not the little one at the bottom, the one right above that. Amar Rava. Tosfos says, on the second line in the Tosfos, V'im tomar, maishna meha da amar besachem beperakol sha'a, tanur shisikuha beklipe orla, v'afa boas apas asura, lemanda amar yeshvach etzim bepas. If someone heats up an oven using the klipim, nuts, the peels of orla fruits, and orla, fruits that grow on the tree in the first 3 years, you're not allowed to get any benefit from. And the assumption is the klipe orla are also asur b'hana. It's part of the fruit. If you fire an oven with klipe orla, and you probably need a lot of them, Sam. Who was the one? Who somebody was fetching about the So you need a lot of a lot of shells to create enough fire. But you masakit the klipe orla. I guess if you had enough, I don't know why. I guess if you have enough fruit at some point, you have enough shells, you got to do something with them. So if you fired the oven with that, if you hold that the shvach etzim in the pas, that the etzim are considered having contributed and are still there in the bread, so you're getting hana, it's asr. So why is it permissible here for a non-kohen to eat the bread that was baked in an oven fired with cumin, you know, whatever it was fired? So Tosfos says, V'yesh lomar, de lo shayach lesor mitam yeshvach etzim bepas, eladafka bi'isure hana'a, mishum de yesh shvach etzim bepas, hainu shvach hana'a de etzim besoch hapas. In other words, when we're talking about shvach etzim, that's nothing to do with flavor. That just means that in order to bake bread, I need an oven and I need fuel. And the question is, remember, the fuel doesn't directly bake the bread. First, it heats the oven up. Then the oven bakes the bread. So if you consider that the wood is still extant in the bread, so there's nothing to do with flavor. The same issue would come up. Klipe orla don't taste like anything. They probably don't smell much like anything either. It's just that the benefit of having heated the oven with it, you're now getting hana on the bread. So if you call that hana, so then it's also to consume the bread. So that's called, that's true, Tosfos says, only by Yisuri hana. However, aval hilka chasam gabe orla the asur hana, asrina meitaima. By orla, where the prohibition is not just to eat, consume by eating, but also in any hana, we prohibit. Aval hacha betruma devadai muteres pana lezarim ein leser mishurim sheyeshvach etzim bepas. You cannot prohibit because of that, because it's permissible b'hana, even to a non-kohen. And Tosfos goes on to prove this. The teda the ha'amar ha'mavashel b'shabes b'shoge yachel b'mesid lo yachel. So the rule is, if you cook food on Shabbos, you're allowed to eat it. If you cooked a b'shoge b'mesid, you're not allowed to eat it. So Tosfos asks a simple question. V'amai b'shogeg ye'ochel. Why are you allowed to eat the bread that you baked on Shabbos b'shogeg? Ha'kol eitzim b'shabbos muktzim afilu nitlashu me'esmol. All wood that you use to cook on Shabbos, to bake on Shabbos when you fire the oven up, all of that wood is muktzah. And if you say v'yeshvach eitzim b'pas, im ken kish'ochel apash shenefam eitzim yeshvach v'ochel muktzah. Now muktzah on Shabbos is not asur b'hana. It's asur betiltum, it's asur b'achila. So Tosfos says, obviously, elavadai k'deperashnu, the lo asrinim yishur m'shvach etzim, eladavke b'yisuri hena k'deprishis, umukta mutar banahu. Tosfos says, there are two issues, potentially, in the bread. One is that you did a malach on Shabbos, you're not allowed to benefit from it. But number two is, what about the wood, the muksa wood that was used to bake it? So Tosfos says, the muksa wood is not a problem, because muksa is not an isur hana, it's only an isur achila. Okay, now why does this matter? So Tosa says the following: Mikan yesh lahatir pas chama shenefe biyom shenef sheafo ove kochavim biyom tov. The ain lesar mishum. Now, if a guy bakes bread for you on Yom Tov, are you allowed to consume it? Now, you're allowed to bake bread, but you have to prepare it from before Yom Tov. You need to prepare the fuel, you need to prepare the flour. Tosa says, the ain lesar mishum deshema ha'etzim shenefu bahem nitlashu hayom umuksim heim demabekach. And let's say maybe the guy cut the wood today to fire the oven. So Tosa says, not a problem. But precious the lomini yeshvach etzem apas rak le'inyan yisirah hanol. The imishum shema tachanu achitim hayom. All right, so I'm gonna skip over that particular part. But anyway, so Tosa's point is that, and you can see this obviously must have been an issue. You know, finally Jews wanted to partake in bread that non-Jews had baked on Yom Tov, and the concern would have been atzei muktza. So Tosa says, it's not a problem, because muktza is not asur b'hana, and you only say yeshvach etzim b'pas when it comes to isurei hana, not when it comes to isurei achila, and this evidence to that is tanur sheisiko b'kamon. Because if the yeshvach etzim b'pas, even legabe isurei achila, then a zar would not be able to eat the bread. Okay. Fine. All right, so we'll stop here. Next week, God willing, I will bring in pieces from the tour in the Shulchan Aruch, and we can actually look and see how the issue of Reach plays out. Oh,